ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bloodstock podcast with co-hosts Justin Darcy and Taylor Dyke.
Welcome to episode 25 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast, proudly sponsored by Jimmy Unweller's Avesta Bloodstock. Joining me today is co-host Taylor Dyke and our special guest, Callum Jeffries. Callum has recently been accepted into the Godolphin Flying Star program, where he's set to take 2 years gaining experience from all corners of the globe, setting himself up for what will no doubt be a bright and successful future within the racing and bloodstock industry. Callum, welcome to the Business of Bloodstock.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. Thank you, Taylor, for having me on this morning. I really appreciate the opportunity and I look forward to getting into it and having a bit of a yarn with you guys today.
Beautiful, mate. First of all, happy birthday, turning 22 today.
Yeah, thank you very much. Another year's ticked over. So, unfortunately not too much planned, just a bit of work today, but yeah. Another year tick, so can't complain.
Nah, beautiful, mate. We love to hear it. We'll get stuck straight into it anyway. Firstly, to get a bit of background on you, we see you across all the Australian sales, see you in New Zealand, but just to clarify, you are from New Zealand and no doubt proud to be representing New Zealand in the upcoming Flying Star program.
Yes, I am a very proud Kiwi. Some people get my accent mixed up, so they don't know initially, but yeah, definitely a very proud Kiwi from Oripi in the Bay of Plenty, which... yeah, has been home for a good while until I moved over to Aussie 8 months ago to join Yarraman. But yep, certainly love New Zealand and always will.
So Callum, for those who might not have met you, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? Obviously, you're a young man working in the racing industry, but tell us a bit about your background.
Okay, so Taylor, I was first brought up on a farm, the Wopwops in Hawke's Bay. And I had my early years on a working away on the farm, helping out there whenever I could on the farm when I was a little toddler on the tractor with them. Tractor was my favorite thing back then. But then we soon moved to the Bay of Plenty onto the farm we're on now. And did my schooling there. And then I was fortunate enough to get an all-round scholarship up to King's College in Auckland. So I did my college years boarding at King's College in Auckland, which then led me down to Lincoln. And I did my first year of uni at Lincoln. And then I did my second and third year of uni, studying a Bachelor of Commerce majoring in Agriculture online through correspondence. And I sort of did it through correspondence so I could get more sort of involvement in the industry and work as much as I can, and then work, help dad on the farm while doing uni and sort of making the most of those 2 years instead of not wasting, but just focusing on study over those university years.
That's awesome. And so how did you get involved with horses? Obviously, you said you did some time at Yarraman and you're working with Waller at the moment. How did you first get involved with horses?
So my granddad would like me to say that it was for him when I was about 3 or 4 years old. We used to go over whenever we could to Matamata and help him out, but I was really only there for the bacon and eggs from a place called Ronnie's, a little cafe called Ronnie's, as most of the Matamata people would know. But I was more keen on my sport back then. I was keen on my sport until about 15, and it sort of balanced out towards horses. And when I was 15, I did my first sale, and I was supposed to be picking up poo, and I was picking up poo, but then I just got like something just clicked, and I just loved it. And I was doing everything that sale, and I started on the lead, and I started grooming, and I hadn't touched a horse much up until then, don't get me wrong, but I was on the lead, I was grooming, I was helping with cards, I was doing a bit of everything. And then from there, the spark hit me, and you know how it is, sales is very vibrant and there's deals going on everywhere, and I've always sort of like loved business, and it was just I was very mind blown, and I just, since then I've just been trying to get as much experience as I possibly can. And that took me through like different preps at Highline, then Cambridge Stud, and then did a few years doing different preps for them. And then I eventually went to Yulong after I did a crack prep again, which was in 2023. And I did the sales for Yulong after Cracker and went back to the farm in between. And from there I saw Aussie and it just went from there, sort of thing.
I guess in terms of that specific moment of when you realised that this was the industry and the career path that you wanted to follow, was there a specific moment, or was it more so just the experience of working with some of these big studs and seeing these deals happen and the glitz and glamour of it all that that got you in, or was there just something very specific that made you go, this is where I want to go?
Well, since that first sale, really, I sort of got a bit of a passion, and I started learning more and more about it, and helping out more and more at home and doing as much as I could to learn more about it. And then like the passion sort of grew, and then from there I couldn't, like, my dad always jokes about how 5 years ago when he had the TV on watching the races every Saturday at home, I'm like, what are you watching this for, Dad? This is so boring. And then like it only took 6 months sort of thing, and I was like, oh, see this thing running today, it's by Praza and it's out of a O'Reilly mare, like how cool is that, like I reckon this thing will get up. And then yeah, it just grew from there, and then I learned more and more. As you know, you're always learning, and there's so much to learn about. It's pretty easy to get hooked and passionate by. And and then I went and did a summer's prep at Highline the next year after that, and then after that I was away laughing. But yeah, I still loved my sport at that stage, and I still wanted to be a professional sportsman. But then it wasn't till I was trying to balance sport and learning, and you know, trying to further myself in the industry as much as possible until first year of uni. And then at first year of uni, I was playing Prem's basketball for Lincoln. I was the only person that wasn't professional in my team, really. And I was sort of decided, like, all these people I'm playing with, their life is basketball, and I have to either choose to make my life basketball and practicing for basketball and then working my way through the basketball system, or get stuck into horses. And I'm very glad that I chose horses, because yeah, it's been an outstanding couple of years since then, and I've got a couple of years ahead of me that I just can't imagine how much fun and how much I'll learn. And yeah, I couldn't imagine myself being in this position 2 years ago, I tell you that much. Yes, I can't wait.
The industry definitely is addictive, and once you're in, you're sort of in it, and it's, and you love it. But we'll touch on your sport a little bit later. You mentioned earlier that you worked with your dad on the farm. We know he has a small broodmare band, but although small, it's been incredibly successful. Who are some of the horses that he's bred?
We've been extremely fortunate, and some would say lucky, but I suppose you probably make your own luck. But we've had Legato, Dark Ashore, and Seabrook come through our small little broodmare band in recent years, which has been an awesome experience. And you know, how couldn't you be hooked after breeding those three horses? Yeah, so we've been fortunate, and I've been fortunate to me, my dad, and my sister Alice, who's actually working at Cambridge Stud. We sort of did all the handling and did all the matings, and yeah, and it was so awesome to see them running that Australian Guineas, that Legato won, and just the race calling and how it all went, and how she was stuck. Then she came out and blitzed them all. Like, I don't think I've had it. I don't think there's been a feeling in my lifetime anywhere near that. Like, yeah, tops everything for sure.
Were you on track that day?
No, we were. It was just actually for the 1,000 Guineas in New Zealand, we had a big barbecue at home, and all the friends and family were there. But for the Australian Guineas, I was actually down at uni. And it was me and my mates, and we were actually just about to go get on the piss. I'm like, boys, we have to watch this. And they were like, oh, what are we watching this for? And I was like, mate, you guys don't know the significance of this right now. And so we ended up watching it together, and then they sort of like saw the free parade and stuff, and they were like, oh shit, this seems legit. And then when she got up, I was going mental, and they like sort of were looking at me strangely, but then they got alongside and they started cheering her home. So yeah, it's quite a cool experience for me and my flatmates at uni.
To see the passion on your face as you're talking about it there, mate, that's exactly what this whole industry is about, and it's what it encapsulates a young audience as well. So yeah, I guess it probably makes sense as to why we've got you on, and we're about to talk about Flying Start as well. And no doubt, to apply for Flying Start, you have to have a passion for the industry. And you know, we've seen a large number of graduates go on to be great successes in the industry from the last 22 intakes. You're in the 23rd intake. Firstly, tell us about the process to actually apply for the Flying Start. And secondly, What do you think from your application stood you out among those that actually applied?
Sure, Justin. It's certainly a long process, and I'm sure Yaramin and the team can tell you how long of a process that is. I was always bouncing ideas from Matt Lard from the team to try and get the most out of my application. But yeah, there's a pre and post interview sort of structure. So pre-interview, you've got to do a minute-long video of you talking, and I was in my video, I was talking about work ethic, and then you've also got to do a cover letter and a CV for them. And then from there, they pick, I think it was around 30 people to interview in my year, but I'm sure it definitely changes each year. And then from there, you do a group interview followed by an individual interview, and then a horsemanship video, as well as a cognitive test online. I would say what would have stood me out was, yeah, maybe you touched on it before, Justin, is the fact that I'm so passionate and I'm so, yeah, I'm sure in my interview, passion really would have stood out. And I also believe that my depth of knowledge may have helped me a wee bit along the way in my ability to answer the questions that they did. So yeah, it just all comes back to passion, because obviously the more passionate you are, the more knowledge you gain. And yeah, certainly in my interview, my ability to put my points out and put it out in a positive manner, in a passionate way, I think definitely would have helped me along the way. And then yeah, with my CV and stuff, I'm lucky to have a vast amount of different experiences in sport, leadership, school and all that. So yeah, I'm sure that didn't get missed. But yeah, passion's probably the main thing for me, I'd say.
You were 21 at the time you applied and did your original interview. You mentioned you spoke in the video about work ethic. There's no denying that in this industry, you have to have a very strong one. Could you tell us a little bit about what you talked about?
Yeah, sure. I more spoke about, I believe it was a couple of months, 4 or 5 months ago now. But yeah, I was talking about how work ethic isn't work effort, should I say, isn't what it's often perceived as in terms of just putting in grunt, and work effort can be a vast range of different aspects of life, whether it's, you know, putting it, like for you guys, Justin, Taylor, today, putting you, I can tell that you've prepared well and you've put good effort into this podcast, and you guys all put good effort into the ANZ news every day that we all read and love, whereas that wouldn't be physical grunt work. And I sort of focused on that, and how especially in this industry there's a lot of, like, without work effort you wouldn't really be able to survive in the industry, but there's so many different aspects of work within the industry, and like, yeah, as I said, everyone would have work effort, otherwise, you know, they would struggle. And yeah, I sort of focused on that, and yeah, in that sort of aspect of how it's not just grunt work and how everyone can show work effort. And yeah, and that's how you can sort of further yourself, in my opinion. If you can lead by example, that's a huge way you can show work effort. But yeah, I'm sure there's plenty other, a lot more qualified to tell you what work effort is than me. So yeah, maybe you should have asked the people in the past podcast, I'm sure. I've still got too much to prove.
Well, absolutely, Callum. I think with the early mornings of at the sales and those sorts of things, I think you've got enough work ethic, and clearly it got you in. So with the program, could you tell us a little bit about what the next 2 years going to entail for you, what the program will be, and sort of where you're heading now?
Yeah, sure, Taylor. Yeah, I'm so fortunate, as I'm sure I've probably said already in this podcast, but so it pretty much starts the 18th of August in Kildare, and then you spend a couple months in Kildare, followed by a couple months in the UK. And then from there, you have a little Christmas break, and then you head to Kentucky in the USA for 6 months, and then followed by Aussie for 6 months, and then Dubai for a few weeks, followed by Ireland for 5 months. And during the course, like, it's hard to put in a few words what you get up to, but you, like, potentially graduate with a certificate in management over the course, but you do so much more than that. You get to do 3 externships, one in the USA, one in Australia, and one in, I say Ireland, but it can be France, Ireland, or the UK. So yeah, but also on top of that, you get to go on farm visits, you get to pretty much do most sides of the physical hands-on, as well as a lot of university papers in order to get a certificate in management, like including veterinary, horse health and nutrition and all that. So this, it's really is very broad, and I can't wait to get stuck in and work my hardest and try and make the most of it. But there's plenty I'll be learning, as long as probably plenty of fun times along the way, I'm sure.
Am I right in saying it's 4 6-month stints in different areas across the 2-year period?
I don't think it's quite 6 months in all of them. I know it's 6 months in the USA, 6 months in Australia, but then you're in Ireland twice, so there, it ends up being a bit more than 6 months, I think, over the two phases. But and then in the UK, you're probably there for a bit shorter, maybe two to three months, and fairly soon it is. But then also Dubai's just a few weeks, which just will be an unreal experience. I've never really touched foot anywhere like Dubai, let alone get a huge insight into their racing industry. It's going to be unreal.
And I guess you haven't been to Dubai or anything like this. Is there a specific place that you're looking forward to going the most for a particular experience, or is it just that the whole program you're just excited to do it?
Oh, I get this a lot. I'd say both. I've never had the opportunity to work in the UK or Ireland, well, anywhere other than Aussie or New Zealand. So, I can't wait to sort of just more get the experiences from the best in each industry virtually. Like, but I'm particularly excited for Ireland and the USA and Kentucky, because obviously Ireland and England are quite similar. I've been to England before, but Ireland, I think, is pronounced as, you know, one of the best breeding jurisdictions in the world by far. I'm particularly excited for that. And I've always got along with the Irish, when I was working in Cambridge Star, one of my best mates to this day is Irish, and he's over there at the moment. So, and I always seem to get along with the Irish very well. So I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun, as well as a lot of learnings. And the USA, because it's such a different industry to what we have here. So I'm sure there's so much learnings and so much experience and so much work effort that I can put in to try and make the most of it. But certainly, it's all just as good as each other, I'm sure, Justin. And yeah, just can't wait to see it all, really, and learn as much as I can.
You'll be traveling around the world with other trainees from countries like Ireland, Morocco, Spain, UK, and India. Not only is this opportunity one full of potential, like, career growth, but it's going to be a great cultural experience for you too, isn't it?
Yeah, I was actually ecstatic when I found out it was such a diverse range of cultures. Because virtually you're traveling around the world for 2 years with 12 people that would then hopefully become your best mates. And I'm sure you will. I've heard from past people on the scholarship that you do become best mates with the people that you're with. So I'm sure it's going to be awesome in the way that we're going to all learn each other's cultures and then learn like the best parts and worst parts of each sort of industry. Even if we don't travel there, I'm sure there'll be a lot of pub talk and a lot of chat about who's got the best industry, and I'll definitely be advocating Australia and New Zealand for sure, because I truly believe, like, I haven't seen the other industries, so that's a bit unfair, but I certainly think we've got it on top at the moment.
We love that you're backing us up, mate. You mentioned, obviously, by the sounds of that, you have spoken to past graduates from the program. Have there been conversations about what to potentially expect from it, or are you sort of looking at it from a holistic approach and just taking it as it comes?
I'd say I've definitely had a few good friends that have helped me both get on, like, with my application process, as well as helped me since and sort of give me a few hints. But I'd say I definitely take my own approach. But so I'd like to thank Mitch Whelan and Charlie King especially. They were very, very good to me, and they're both good Kiwi boys that have made it. Well, Mitch is still finishing up the course now, but Charlie's over in Kentucky loving it, and he's got a great job over there, and both great Kiwi boys. So They've helped me a lot, but I'd say I'll definitely try and take my own approach, but there's certainly aspects that they've definitely given me a few tips in terms of packing and what to pack, what to not to pack, what to buy. So, because I suppose it's 2 years away, you got to try and get as much out of the people that have already done it so you don't make the same mistakes, sort of thing.
What is your goal from the program? Is there anything specific that you're wanting to learn more about, or?
I'd say I'm gonna, it'd be stupid not to make the most of the program and learn as much about every part of the industry as possible. But so I've got no set mind going in, but I know I'm pretty passionate about the breeding side of it at the moment. But yeah, I'll definitely go with an open mind and try and learn as much as I can. But yeah, it's more about just making the most of it and putting my foot forward and everywhere I can, working as hard as I can, make it so people can see my work effort and try and progress as much as I can while I'm on the course. And hopefully something will pop up along the way as a result of hard work and, you know, putting my best foot forward and working well. And then just try and progress from up post the course and know that there's still so much more to go and so much more to learn once I finish the course. And yeah, just pretty much my goal is to progress as much as I can within the industry and learn as much as I can. And then hopefully one day I'll be able to, yeah, well, it's obviously in the very far future. And but yeah, one day I'd love to stand my own stallions or have my own broodmare band. Like, that'd be a great passion of mine. But obviously that's so far away, and so I've got so much to do before then, so much to learn. And but yeah, that's definitely a goal in the future. But someone like Hugh Field is a huge aspiration of mine. I admire him a lot and what he's been able to do in what, the space of 15 years max, from virtually nothing, leasing what is now Newgate. Yeah, it's definitely something that I would love to do one day. Obviously he's a great man. I don't know if I'm as great a man as him, but time will tell, you know. But yeah, so to know that he was in my position, I don't know how many years ago, it definitely is something that gives me a bit of motivation and tells me maybe one day it is possible, but we'll have to see. But yeah, for now, I'm just focus on my passion and just try and learn as much as I can and make as many connections as I can. Yeah, and just grow as much as I can as a person and as a horseman, really.
I'll ask this. So you mentioned that one day you want to be able to run a stallion farm, stand stallions of your own. If you were to pick one stallion at the moment between Australia and New Zealand that you could stand at your farm as your inaugural stallion, who would that be and why?
Yeah, sure, Justin. That's definitely a tricky one. I do believe the Australian and New Zealand broodmare market is very spoiled for choice at the moment, for sure. But my friends might give me a bit of slack about this because of how much I love the Mitchells and Yarraman, but I'll have to go with Vinny. I can't go against my boy Vinny. What he's been able to do from such a small service fee and probably a very average at best group of mares to start with has been incredible. And what he's been able to achieve year to year and the amount of accolades he's been able to conquer year to year with his stock has been impressive. Not only, obviously, they've got an astronomical amount of good racehorses, but his sale results and now what he's leaving is broodmare sire. Yeah, they're going unreal, and what, he's already got two Group 1 winners as a broodmare sire. So as a stud, starting out, far out, you wouldn't be able to complain if you've got Vinny producing what he does, as well as being able to keep some of the fillies and raise some of the fillies and then breed from some of the fillies, you know, it's a pretty safe bet that as a broodmare sire, he's going to continue to grow, and not only on the track, but, you know, you can back him as a broodmare sire to produce nice types that'll sell in the sale. And as we know, it's pretty important to be able to sell horses because it's commercially difficult if you can't make a buck. But yeah, sort of one that's a bit more less obvious, because I feel like that's too obvious to only choose one. I would say, yeah, Super Seth back home. He's so exciting for the New Zealand industry. And I think I read something yesterday about Chris Waller talking about his Super Seths that he's got in the stable and how they're going to be more expensive, but he's definitely going to be buying more of them. And that's just contributes to how he's done in his first crop of 3 year olds. Was like 3 Group 1 winners, which is pretty insane. Like, I don't know if there's been a stallion in New Zealand that's been able to achieve that. And they ran as 2 year olds, both in New Zealand and Australia. And then Linebacker came second in the Champagne Stakes as a 2 year old. And then he trained on to win a Group 1 at 3. So, like, as a stud master, Mark Chittick must be rubbing his hands together, I'd say. So that's very exciting, not only for Waikato stud, but also New Zealand to have a stallion like that coming through the ranks, along with all the other good stallions they've got at the moment. And Farazur, Sav, Purin Kanto is having a huge season, and Satono Aladdin, like, far out. We're pretty spoiled for choice in New Zealand. It's almost too many good stallions for the three-man band we've got, probably. But, it's very exciting.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned there, it's a great thing for the New Zealand breeding industry, given that you're having these young stallions on the rise and we're coming to the end of the era as such with Savabeel, and to have the Perincano as the super sets and the price is coming through, it's just phenomenal for what was probably looking a little bit dire 6 or 7 years ago for the New Zealand breeding industry to now have these very good stallions that are not only winning, you know, winning these big races in New Zealand, but they're selling well to Hong Kong, they're winning races in Australia, they're proper world-class stallions.
Yes, 100%. Certainly I've been spoiled for sure, starting probably, I'm turning 22 today, so I've been 7 years in the industry. I've probably been a bit spoiled, really, with the stallions that we've had over my time in the industry, and I've probably thought it's a bit easier than it probably is because of the stallions that we've had coming through the ranks in the past 5 or so years. It's certainly exciting times, and with Entain on board and the prize money going up in New Zealand, it's bloody awesome to see. And it's certainly an exciting time to be in New Zealand.
With the Dream Stallion Farm, would it be in New Zealand, or have we converted you over to Australia now?
I was actually talking to my father the other day, and he said, you're not going to come back to New Zealand, are you, ever? And I was like, Jesus. Yeah, I don't know. I really, really love Australia, my time in Australia. So it's hard to know. My heart's always going to be New Zealand. But, I suppose it's opportunity, isn't it, at the end of the day. They're both great countries, and I've loved both of them. And but to be fair, living in Australia and New Zealand, it's pretty similar. Similar people, both great people, and similar morals, similar values. And, so I'm pretty lucky that both industries are definitely in a great place. So I can't really answer that question, Big Taylor, but I think at the moment Australia is pretty good. I'm loving it in Australia.
Well, mate, luckily we've got plenty of water to go under the bridge and plenty of experience to come before you have to make any big decisions like that. One thing I do want to bring up, we mentioned before about your sport. You mentioned that you'd obviously played at a reasonably high level. I did a little bit of digging on YouTube and found a under-19s basketball scholarship highlight video. This was for an under-19 side, I'm assuming, in New Zealand. Tell me a little bit about this. Obviously, being a scholarship, you must have been quite a high-level player. And along with that, tell us a little bit about what else you've done through your sporting career.
That's a little bit embarrassing now, Justin. You've really put me under the bus there. But I think that might have been – I had to make a video for Lincoln, for my university, for a scholarship. So I did that. I don't even know if I got the scholarship. I don't think I did. But I ended up beating some of the scholarship players to it anyway, so I was pretty chuffed at that, to be fair, at the time, without floating my boat too much. But I've always been a keen sportsman. Yeah, basketball and running was sort of my thing. And I sort of was in representative teams growing up, and then I was lucky enough to – I never cracked the black jersey, unfortunately, but I was lucky enough to play in New Zealand development teams along the way. And come over and play the Australians, which I was probably more in envy of back then than I am now. I'm probably more of an Australian now than I am then, thankfully. But it certainly was a great childhood and a great, probably a great way to learn what work effort is. Yeah, so I was very lucky in my running as well. That's obviously a gut buster, and I was sort of in the New Zealand sort of level for running too. So yeah, I was pretty lucky to have that growing up and learn the good values that sports brings. But yeah, as I said, when I sort of got to uni, I sort of had to make a decision whether I go towards sort of a semi-pro sort of route where I have to, you know, put my heart and soul and my full life into it, or horses. And I chose horses, which I'm very happy about. Not to say that I wouldn't play sport where I can, but it's go in touch always went very well, and with Yarraman and a few beers afterwards, I always love. But yeah, I certainly loved my sport growing up, and it definitely taught me a lot. Yeah, and a lot of that's probably transferred into the person I am today, and the worker I am today, and all the work effort and sort of knowing what it takes to get to the top. I'd say that's probably something that I've definitely taken away. It definitely, as Kobe Bryant would say, it takes 10,000 hours to perfect something. So I certainly have a bit to go, but I'm sure it's definitely doable. Yeah.
Unreal. We will finish off with what we call our fast five segment. So it's just five quick fire questions to answer off the top of your head to get to know you a little bit better. We'll kick off. You might have answered this a bit earlier, but who is your favorite ever racehorse and why?
Oh, this is a tough one. If I was biased, I'd have to say Legato, and my family might be a bit disappointed in me for not saying Legato. But yeah, obviously I love Legato, but Winx. Yeah, Winx was at her forefront when I was first sort of getting into the industry, and my passion was sort of growing. And yeah, it was unbelievable what she was able to do. And from the back, like most of her starts. Yeah, group one after group one, it was pretty incredible. And I remember saying to the old man, it's probably a bit silly looking back now, but I remember saying to the old man, why doesn't everyone just put their whole bank account on this horse? And like, she's not going to lose. Like, she's won this many in a row. It's just, like, this is too easy for her. Even when she gets stuck or like misses the start by what did she miss the start by? And that was like 10 lengths. Why don't, like, she still wins? Like, why don't they just put their bank balance on it? But yeah, I hope I've got a bit more educated and probably a bit more smart with my money. But yeah, probably Winks would answer the question without any bias. Yeah,
she was certainly a freak. 4 Cox plates in the record she's got. Not sure we'll ever see that again. But what's your most memorable moment from the sales circuit, whether it be a highlight lot that you've worked with or just a funny moment that you keep recalling in your head?
This sort of, I to be fair, I've taken one through four. I think my highest lot was actually one of ours at home, which is quite special. It's Vinnie Colt that came stud board off us, and it's a half to Seabrook. I saw it, put it through for 510 grand. So that was a special moment. But I'd say this probably varies off your sort of question, but I'd say that maybe a moment from Vin Cox, in the fact that when I worked for Yulong, he was at Yulong, and he was so inspirational, and he was so knowledgeable, and I learned so much of him, and he was always so good to me. So yeah, thanks Vin for everything you taught me. But I'd say one main thing I took away from Vin is the way you present yourself, and I think that's really carried through and helped me out big time in my personality and to get where I am today. Not that I've accomplished the world by any means, but yeah, he always said every parade, come out, present yourself nicely, have a yarn to the buyer or the inspector, and yeah, just try and present yourself. And then if you are carrying good energy, like, they'll carry good energy and have good thoughts through to the horse. And I think that's something that everyone can take away. And you can certainly tell when you go around the sales, I think that the people that have a bit of a positive energy and a positive aura about them, it certainly makes a difference. And yeah, that's something I sort of continue to work on at Yulong. And yeah, I think that's huge. Not only leading a horse or presenting a horse, but in every part of life, let alone the industry. Yeah.
Vin certainly is one of the incredible minds of the industry, and you always do have a smile on your face, so you must have taken that advice pretty literally. But what is your favourite spot for a night out on the sales circuit? We know you do love a beer or two.
I'd say this might not be on the sales circuit, but the Skonara sale goes very well, I reckon. Yeah, there's been a few big nights at the Skonara sale, some good friends, and they'd probably want me to say that a few tequila pineapples. One night when I was at the RSL, we got a bit, probably had a bit too many, and yeah, they got me on the tequila pineapples for the first time. You know, I was going around saying I want a tequila pineapple, and that was a bit embarrassing the next morning. But yeah, you can't beat Dolly Smooth at the Gold Coast. Oh, the Hollow Inn at Warwick Farm. My first sale in Aussie was Sydney Classic sale, English Classic sale, and yeah, the Hollow Inn. I was there most nights, I'd say, always staying in control, of course. But yeah, that was, I thought it, I was like, man, this Australian sale was so much fun after the Hollow Inn. So that's quite funny. That's definitely something I always remember.
No one ever forgets their first experience of the Holiday Inn. It's one of the great joints of the sales circuit.
Yeah, it's all right. It's
Cal, who was your idol growing up? And this doesn't have to be in racing or bloodstock either, just an idol of yours, you know, through your younger years.
It's a bit of a hard one, Justin, but I'd say in my younger years, Michael Jordan was certainly someone that I admired for sure. After reading all his books and all the movies you could find on him and documentaries, yeah, it was pretty obvious that his hard work is the reason he became the best in the world, and I still believe he's the best in the world over LeBron. People might not like that, but I think it's a fact. But yeah, his hard work really stood out, and he always said hard work beats talent. And yeah, he became a global superstar from the fact that he just put his head down and constantly worked. He didn't even have a basketball court, he was playing on grass when he was younger, and I think he's truly inspirational, and the reach he had was pretty inspirational after that. But I'd say, yeah, in the industry, I was very lucky to work with the Mitchells, and they are truly, truly great people. And the fact that they're, you know, with us every day, and they show us what hard work, they set the standard. It's definitely someone Harry, Arthur, and Bill, I was lucky to go around with Bill for a few sales. They definitely set the standard, and you can see why they've managed to make their own luck. And it's like Vinny and Halvin's on a good run at the moment, definitely proved himself as a sire, and now Brave Smash hopefully will do the same from his numbers, as he's been pretty good. But yeah, you can see why they've got such a successful farm, where they realistically started from not a lot. Yeah, but also Sir Patrick Hogan, obviously. I never got to work with him when I was at Cambridge State. I was under Brendan Lindsay. But yeah, his stories are outstanding. And yeah, definitely someone that I sort of have always held in high regard, and always sort of thought what a human being he was. After mainly hearing stories, I got to go to a few selling parades when I was younger when he was on the mic, but that's about it. But yeah, through stories, he's, yeah, definitely someone I'd admire to be like also.
And finally, what is one bit of advice you'd give to someone looking to apply for Flying Start in the next intake?
Yeah, so I'd say if you think about applying, definitely it's worth applying whether you get on or not. You definitely learn so much from it. But I'd say passion, I know it's recurring theme, but it's huge. It's huge no matter what part of the industry you are, in my opinion. But especially if you're going for the Flying Start, you know, with passion comes knowledge. And, you know, if you're passionate about something, you want to learn, and you'd learn as much as you can. And then the more you learn, the more you gain towards the Flying Start, but also towards your life in the industry. But yeah, I'd say try and work as hard as you can, find the place that you want to work and work as hard as you can. And sooner or later, the good thing about the industry is you do get noticed, hard work gets noticed. And once you get someone on your side that can back you, keep working hard, you keep learning from them, keep being open to learn as much as you can, because I suppose that's what the course is all about. And then, yeah, just apply with confidence and show why, I know it sounds a bit cringe, but show why you should be chosen, show why you've got the personality for it, the passion for it, show why you deserve to be on, and why you, and try and get forth. I know it's hard in an interview or CV, get forth why you love the industry, and yeah, just prove your love for the industry, really. That's what I'd say. Prove your love for the industry and prove how hard you work to get to the point you are. That's probably the two main takeaways, I'd say.
Well, Cal, most of all, what you've done here today is certainly not that you've had to prove it, but you certainly have proven how much you love this industry and the passion you have. And, you know, the dedication that you have for the industry is something, you know, we can all certainly look at and take something from it, mate. So, you know, we certainly commend you for, you know, getting on the course and you know, really dedicating your life to the industry, giving up what could have been a very successful sports career as well. But, mate, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with Taylor and I today. We've loved every minute of having you on and listening into your insights about the flying start and what's involved and your career going forward. We wish you the best of luck and, most of all, mate, a happy birthday for today. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, thank you very much, Justin and Taylor. Thoroughly enjoyed being on. It's been awesome to have a yarn with you today and awesome to chat about the industry and different parts of life. But yes, I certainly am very appreciative of you guys having me on today. But I'd also like to give a huge thanks to the Flying Start for giving me this great opportunity. And I certainly look forward to making the most of it over the next 2 years. I'd also like to thank all those who've given me opportunities over the years and helped me to grow both as a horseman and person. To the Mitchells, Matt Lance and the team at Yarraman, Yulong and Ben Cox, Cambridge Stud, Highline Thoroughbreds, and now the team at Chris Wallace. I really appreciate everything everyone has done for me. Lastly, I'd like to thank my father, Warwick Jeffries, for being such a great role model to me and my family for giving me all the opportunities and supporting me every step of the way.